This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
There's a lot. There's Umbrella Academy to talk about. There's the Mulan situation we were just talking about. There's the massive layoffs at Warner Brothers, specifically hitting DC Comics and even hitting HBO right after they've launched HBO Max. There's a lot to talk about, including DC Universe dropping all, now it's official, all video content is leaving DC Universe and going to HBO Max, and DC Universe will be comics only. So that's how we're opening. That's our introduction to all we have to talk about here on the Nerdcast episode. It's been so long, I don't remember and didn't look on the site, but it's still brought to you by the wonderful folks over at Geek Garage. Head on over to geek-garage.com. Check them out. Definitely check them out. They've been patient with us as we've had, not only that, talk about the months. Like, Tyler, like, what are you doing breaking wrists here? Why we can't record? Bob's moving. Adam and I got some heavy shit going on. Tyler's breaking his wrist, you know, just trying to jump off chairs and stuff.
I was on drugs for a while. It happens.
Apparently. All right. Anyways, it is the Nerdcast. Adam, Tyler, myself, Iggy here. I thought Bob was going to join us this week, but maybe he needs another week getting stuff situated in his new place. How you gentlemen doing today? That's about it.
You can't ask that question, right? Like, how am I doing?
You want me to lie to you? Because I can do that.
Right, we have to lie to our followers.
I'm awesome. Fucking awesome. Everything's great.
I'm doing decent. I bought some new shoes today. Like, that's a solid win.
It's
really comforting that we're 7 years into this and we still don't know what episode we do when we start the episode. That's really comforting. That familiarity is perfect for me.
What's really uncomfortable is when you said we're 7 years into this. I didn't know if you meant the pandemic or the podcast or what at that point, because I don't even know what day it is anymore. It's all been lost this summer. But yeah, there's a lot to talk about. We were chatting quite a bit before we got started recording, so plenty to cover, plenty of pop culture stuff, kind of fill you in on what we've been doing. I've noticed, we had to start recording. So we've been throwing out some other fun podcasts on this feed. Really definitely check out Podcast Unreal. That's a blast. I think my favorite episode still is the full contact Team Archery Championship press conference that we did with those gentlemen. Basically, Podcast Unreal is our improv podcast where the people on it are assigned a character and a theme like minutes before we start recording. So those guys have done pretty good, and we're going to expand that a little bit, move more with it. It's been a couple months since we've thrown out a diving deep over here, but we had some good diving deeps. One that I went angrily into systematic racism and all this other stuff. We're going to cover some other hard and big topics as we head into election season. But what we have been missing is this, guys. We've been missing the Nerdcast, and I've noticed by reviewing the numbers that people want it back. We've had some old episodes getting a lot of listens lately. They miss your beautiful voices.
Well, that's nice of them.
That's nice.
I mean, we are the stars, so that checks out.
We're the flagship, baby.
We are. So it is important that we're here talking, doing stuff. I don't know. And honestly, too, this was the right time to come back together, because I did mention all those things. And I think the biggest of those, Umbrella Academy season 2. Oh, so good. So good. Tyler, tell me you finished it.
I did. Okay. I'm not going to jump on the so great, amazing, awesome thing, but it was fun.
It was good. I loved it. I thought it was a great season.
You liked the first one a lot more than I did, too. So that's all right.
Adam, you give us
I don't dislike it. I really like them both. I don't like them as much as a lot of other people do.
So you've read both those volumes, right?
I have, yes.
Right. And I mean, obviously some even more straying away in the season than there was in the first season from it. You've read it too, Adam? You're shaking your head.
Yeah. I've read one and two. I've got three. I haven't read it yet, but
I'm going to read it before. Yeah. But three, because three came out like 10 years later from volume one and two. I was wondering why I never read volume three. And then when I was looking to order it, I was like, oh, 10, that's why it wasn't out back then. I like a lot of the discrepancies that we've seen this season. There were some definitely a couple curveballs thrown in there that are maybe a little too weird, would be a way to put it, for even Umbrella Academy sakes, like even Gerard Way's writing. But there were some, I think what really got me this season, there were a couple significant subplots that are in the comic, but they felt more powerful due to the current social climate that's in the world right now. And Allison and obviously Vanya having to go back and deal with certain prejudice in 1960s Texas, of all places, you know. So I think that gave me a little bit more warm feeling even for this season, if I'm going to be honest.
I was talking with a friend about it, and I think what really struck both of us was that, you know, that the comic's fantastic, but you get a lot more character building and a lot more backstory, like with the individual siblings, I think, in the show. And I think that's really good. Like, I think they've done a really good adaptation where they've found some of that same spirit and some of those same ideas, but told it in their own way. And I think that's really what, when a TV show that's an adaptation, when it hits really well, that's what it does good. It doesn't necessarily do exactly what the source material does well, but it does its own thing and more pays homage and, you know, really tries to stick to the spirit and the heart of what it's adapting. I think that's really important. I think that's what I've really enjoyed about Umbrella Academy is it feels the same kind of, I want to say zany, but it's got that kind of feel to it, I guess.
All right. And also to kind of tie into that, I think you could argue 7 out of 7, but at least 6 out of 7 of the characters cast are like, I mean, it's some solid casting. Like, they did a fantastic job.
That, I mean, I would definitely say, I mean, one thing I would say out the gate is I definitely like the stories in the comic books better than the show, but I like the characters in the show a lot better because they are characters.
That's like, a good, I like, I, it.
Love,
I like it.
I love Number 5. I love Vanya. I really like Klaus. Like, I like the characters on the show. Like, they are who they are, and they're fantastic. But the stories, this is going to sound like a weird criticism. Early on in the season, it's almost too real. And I get it. They're dealing with some like big issues, but like, it's very grounded. It's very ho-hum stories and like plot lines in the very first half of the season. And then in the second half of the season, they just go off the rails and it just gets really weird for the sake of getting weird at some points. But I mean, here's the thing. I watched the whole thing and I really enjoyed it. It's just, I don't know, every time I watch it, I feel like there's a better version of this show that almost got made, but instead they made this one. And it suffers from this one more so than, not as bad as its first season, but as true of almost every show that's ever been on Netflix ever, you could have trimmed a solid couple hours out of it and right. made a much tighter.
We talked about that with the Marvel ones too, right? Like, you knock out that episode. Yeah. Seven and
there's a you cut a couple hours out of this and it's a better show.
Well, I was even tight and good show. Right, episode 8, I'm like, oh, Ben, take your fucking time there with fun. Like, seriously, like, how long are you going to take to get this thing taken care of? But I get it too, and I have a question for you guys. So without spoiling it, because we are pretty early on, I do not remember a very wildly odd unmasking in the comic series that happened at the end of this show. Am I wrong? And did that happen? Did somebody reveal a secret identity at the end of Dallas, the comic series, like they did here in this?
Not that I remember, but maybe, I don't know.
I'll have to take it offline.
I don't remember it either, but it's been a year and a half since I read the comic.
It's been way longer.
But you know who I'm talking about. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So then I'm not the only one that, at least if it was in the comic, it wasn't as dramatic as it was in the show.
I think it's definitely in the comic, but it's definitely not like that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's what I was curious. I was curious about that. It was interesting because when it happens and Orion looks at me because he's reading it. And there was a few things that in season 1, Orion asks me like, hey, what happens to, you know, there was this many kids born. What happens this? What happens that? Says all these things. And I purposely just don't even answer because I know, you know, questions are going to be answered down the road. But then Orion looks at me at the end of that scene and I'm like, I honestly do not remember this dramatic moment happening.
I think that one falls in that bomb instead of squid kind of category.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
It's like the end result's the same, but they executed it a way differently.
Exactly. I do. So for those that haven't read the comic, obviously you don't get this whole, like, Pogo wasn't a big deal in the second, but like this wasn't a big, and you kind of get some unique perspective there, which I think, because people loved in the first season Pogo and Mom, so you get a lot more of them in this. But I think that what I appreciated the most about it is, Tyler, I think you did a great job of saying that the individual stories, the storylines are better done in, you know, way in what Boz, right? Like, they did it better than, I guess, was it Blackman and whoever else wrote, but the characters are so much better. And I feel like the characters that had huge development in season one were able to kind of step back and let the characters that didn't have as big development get more development in season two, if that makes sense. And I felt like we got to a point where the only one I'm really missing that strong development on right now is Luther. That's the only one I feel like hasn't gotten his big power moment. He hasn't gotten his big development or his big hero scene, right?
I mean, he got a lot of it in season one. I think it fell flat. Like, he had two or three episodes that were all Luther, from his time on the moon to the to the mission that made him turn into the thing he is now. But like, I don't think they worked as well as some of the other characters' development episodes.
But they were even more like flashbacks or lookbacks, as opposed to like Klaus having that climactic moment in season one. Diego, you get to see the full extent of his powers here in season two, right? Like, you get to see.
Yeah.
And Luther, right. Luther lifts a tractor. Like, that's what he lifts a tractor.
He's got the most backstory, but I don't think he has had his full growth arc.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. And to be fair, that complaint is not untrue, but at the same time, it's a little bit unfair because the show is telling a different kind of story than the comic book. The comic books were telling a weird, over the top, zany deconstruction of superhero tropes and stuff like that, where this show is more about family and abuse and trauma and fucked upness and just dealing, getting on with your life and learning to like there. That's, it's a personal story between these siblings, as opposed to like, let's watch some kids fight supervillains kind of nonsense and make it as weird as possible. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I was told. And so Laura asked about like differences with the books and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know, in the books, we get a lot of the kids doing the Umbrella Academy thing. And the only time we really get that so far is the bank robbery at the beginning of episode one, in season one. Right. Yeah. And it's a bank robbery. It's not like their first mission, they go and, you know, save the world. You know, they don't just stop a bank robbery. Like, they're built and do save the world a lot in the comics as kids. And we don't get any of that. And so
I am curious though, if they do get renewed for a third season, they did open the door to show scenes like that now, which would be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where it goes. I think it's not even a if they get the third season. They're going to get a third season. Well, Netflix has made some questionable decisions with series before, so it's I guess don't get it.
Two seasons, and you've already won if you got two.
Right. So yeah, it was a good series. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was good to kind of revisit it. Now I'm really looking forward to getting more of The Boys because we got that coming around the corner from Amazon, Boys Season 2. Recently, we watched that one.
The trailers for that look amazing.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I remember to kind of give us a flashback of Season 1. When we finished that, I think, Tyler, you were an episode or two ahead because you were like, oh, you guys got to catch up because you were really excited about that one. And then when the season ends, I think that's why you were so excited, because I was like, no, this is not what happens. Like, so season two is going to go into unfounded territory for even anybody of us that have read The Boys, because it is completely different at this point now. I mean, there's probably going to be some things you'll see, but in terms of like your final arc in the comic is kind of what it was, season one was setting up to already have, and then we just kind of blew right over it. So really excited to see what they do here with season two. And a lot of questions.
Excited. The trailers show a lot of black noir, and I wonder if they've been saving all the black noir stuff for season two, because they didn't really touch it in season one, and it's a big part of the comics early on.
But I don't know, because I'm kind of happy with how they deal with him in season one, where you just get those little bits of him, like him just showing up at the piano to play, and the guy gets so nervous and just leaves, or things like that. And it's just, even when they're in the meeting room, he's like, not you, Black Noir. You've been great. You keep doing you. And you're like, what has he even been doing? We don't know. Like, it's so, I kind of like, if they keep doing that, I'll be okay with it. But if they do cover more of, yeah, give a little more him, because he is a pretty badass character. Like, so really interested to see where they go there.
Well, and his quote unquote secret is pretty big in terms of like the comic book.
We'll have to talk offline because I'm not totally 100%. I didn't read, so I haven't read it, and it's like, I didn't read it in its full, and that has also been a while since I've read it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk offline about that. I mean, it's a comic book that came out a long time ago, but obviously a lot of people didn't read it and they're watching the show, so I don't want to spoil anything. So we'll, but yeah, his secret identity is a big, big, big plot point of the comic book.
Right. See, and I feel like with you saying that should be a, maybe when you say it, I'll be like, oh shit, how did I forget that? Because I definitely have those moments a lot this summer. but maybe I don't know. But anyway, some good content. One thing we also hinted at when we were starting, we said we don't have a lot to talk about, is obviously DC Universe, which a pretty, like, it seemed like a Warner, it was a failed thing from Warner anyways. Kudos on the attempt to try to give you an all nerd platform with the, you know, digital content and the, it's all digital content, I'm sorry, but the watching content as well as the reading content, I guess would be a better way to put it. Obviously HBO Max and upping the price from their previous HBO subscriptions, right? So they need more content, need all the stuff. So kind of moving everything over there, really interested to see what's happening there. So that, but this kind of accompanies some huge, huge news. And we did cover this. We've been covering a lot less news, obviously, on the website, focusing more on our podcast. But one thing we did hit on, and I put a little opinion into it, was obviously the big layoffs that happened this week at Warner Brothers. Kind of interesting, too, because the weekend before, because this will air on Tuesday, Bleeding Cool, which is actually owned by Warner Brothers, or Time Warner, more specifically, it hit, like, there's rumors that layoffs are going to happen. And then part of Bleeding Cool staff even gets laid off, is how they find out for sure that it was happening on Monday. But layoffs in almost all of their entertainment divisions, as of Monday, I haven't even looked into it further, on day one, there was over 800 laid off. And obviously DC Comics, which we've talked about for the past year or two, like Warner has, there's been rumors from everything that they want to sell it off, but somehow keep the characters for the movies. They want to just stop doing the comics altogether. They want to whatever. Warner just doesn't seem bought in on the comic side of DC, although they want to somehow retain those characters for other types of franchises. And you knew once those layoffs were kind of getting rumored and restructured here, and you have a pandemic as an excuse to do it, that DC was just, it was going to be, as internal DC staff members put it, quote, a bloodbath.
But yeah, then Jim Lee comes out and says, oh no, we're totally guaranteed. I mean, we're still totally dedicated to comics. That's what we do. Like, did you see that statement that came out on?
Yeah, but Jim Lee's going to be dedicated to comics no matter where he goes and stuff. He doesn't even have a role in it. Like, his title.
No, he's DC's publisher. Chief creative officer.
Is that what they changed it to now? Because it was
Chief creative officer / publisher.
Right. I thought they even
he came out yesterday and was like, 100% publishing comics is still the cornerstone of everything we do. So, I mean, they say that, but they fired their editor in chief and pretty much everyone who writes comics. Right.
It might be the cornerstone to everything you do. It's not the cornerstone to everything Warner Brothers does. So they're like, screw you guys. We're out.
Yeah. Nobody was safe in this. Yeah. Except for Jim Lee.
They're never going to get rid of it because they need that IP farm. They're just downsizing it.
Well, that was the thing. So I got in a conversation with somebody, because the big thing, and we've talked about it before on the podcast, is that if Wonder Woman is licensed to DC or Warner Brother, it technically, if they quit producing the comic, it has to go back. It goes back to the, what's his name? The family's creator. Martin Wright or whatever. And so I don't know if that counts. Like, are you allowed to say we keep making movies and digital stuff, or does it have to be the published comic? And that's where I started asking questions, because I'm like, I don't see how some of these characters, it's hard to retain. Like you said, it's hard to have that IP farm without them there. On top of that, then these characters disappear into oblivion, and you're talking a decade later. How do you make a Plastic Man movie when you've not even tried to.
Well, and DC's is like, Wonder Woman's a weird beast in the sense that the contract around her IP is different than a normal comic book character. Most comic book characters belong to the publisher or rarely back then they didn't belong to the creator. They do now, like there's so many creator-owned comics and stuff like that. But most of the characters that DC uses belong to DC. So as long as Warner Brothers holds on to DC, they get to use them in perpetuity. DC's always been a weird conglomeration of like when they bought, you know, Charleston Comics, or they bought this comic or they bought that comic, and then they pushed them all together, and then they made weird versions of, and DC, like there was a back in the day where they would make knockoff versions of comic book characters that were owned by other comic book companies and then went ahead and just bought that company anywhere, and then both of them were in the same world, and it gets weird and complicated like that. But I don't know. I think it's one of those things where like they'll keep the bare minimum people they need to keep writing Batman comics and Wonder Woman comics and Justice League comics, and they'll continue to own DC forever so they can continue to make reboots Superman every 5 years. But other than that.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, they like try to rush copying Marvel on the movie side. Like Marvel, Disney's kind of just accepted the fact that we're probably going to take a hit on the comic side, but we want to keep making this. We're going to keep making quality comics so that there's tie-in stories, that there's characters continually going, that there's excitement around it. And it's like, if you're going to copy anything Warner Brothers that they're doing on their comic side, like, here you go. Like, do what Disney is doing. Make those comics better to try to get, you know, build up some attention to those characters.
Well, yeah, and for a business, like, the thing a lot of people don't understand about comic books is, comic books is not, it's not an expensive business for a big company. It's just a annoying business. Logistically, it's a nightmare with all the freelancers. You have to hire artists. You have to hire writers. You have to have editors. You have to have you have to, all the bits and pieces, and then you have to print physical media. Then you have to distribute physical media and stuff like that.
But game's changing this
distribution
summer,
too. But in the grand scheme of things, to someone like Disney, that's the kind of problem they can just throw money at and ignore. And the return on investment they get is, if Marvel's physical comic department like is in the black at all, hooray. That's like gravy on the fact that, oh, we get to make Spider-Man movies, and we get to make Avengers movies, and we get to make Black Panther movies. Like, Disney can give a shit less.
Right. You can essentially treat it like R&D, right? Like, I mean, just write that budget off. Like, this is marketing, this is research and development, and we're going to let people make stories about characters. And we can literally see which ones connect with our target audience. Like, because our target audience is to get people into the movies, and the people that buy comics go see the movies. It's just what they do. And so why wouldn't you? Because like you said, it's not overly expensive. So why would you cut it out?
Here's the thing.
When you
Marvel's
a little bit of money to it and let it go.
I mean, it's Marvel's, I mean, it's millions and millions and millions of dollars, but to a company like Disney, it's literally nothing. Like, they write shit off like that for breakfast. Like, the entire Marvel division, the comics division, they write stuff off like that on an afternoon. Like, they don't care.
Ooh, you eat shit for breakfast?
I mean, let's put it this way. I wonder, and I'd have to like look and do the math on it, but I bet you Disney lost more money closing Disneyland and Disney World for like a week than they would lose if they didn't sell a single Marvel comic book.
Oh, it's guaranteed. Because when they closed it, they were talking about, yeah, that's like, I didn't realize how much revenue is there, like parks in like places for event, like their live parks, hotels, cruises. When, if I can remember correctly, we have to go back, but it's in our article news, because when they did change that, it was somewhere around like 65% of the company's revenue is that. That's that. And I was like, dude, I didn't realize they make that much money off of parks. And when sit there and think about it, obviously they do. It
costs $140 to get into Disney World or something crazy like that. It's so expensive, and they just keep cranking up the price to keep the number of people down, and it doesn't work. So they just keep cranking it up again. So they're like, okay, people will pay literally whatever we ask them to. I mean, they have they're basically Jurassic Park. You know, we charge $1,000 a day, $2,000 a day. People will pay. And it's like, yeah, they sure as hell will.
Yeah.
And they'll pay $8 for a soda pop once they get inside. So right.
Disney's got it. It's definitely a lot going on in Warner, and I'm sure over the next few weeks we'll see a lot develop. A huge takeaway is obviously there are tons of high profile people from the comic industry, from the movie theater industry, from a lot of these industries that are floating around. And when things get back to some sense of a new normal, there's going to be some companies that are going to pick off some of these people and make some huge innovative changes because of it. So I'm interested to see what happens.
I'm wondering how many phone calls Marvel made this past week.
Oh, he got something.
Just like, we got money. Why not?
I mean, the editor in chief, like, yeah, like you are high, high profile people that are gone from DC Comics, and not even DC. We're focusing on DC right now, but HBO Max is only a few months old, and we had some high, high programming leads and high executives from the HBO side lose their jobs that past week too. So really interesting to see, because there's a lot of other networks still trying to get that streaming platform figured out, you know? So you got a lot of people floating out there that are good to work. And speaking of it too, another thing that we kind of talked about before we started recording. So we covered it a couple weeks ago, Mulan coming to Disney Plus with a new Premier Access is what they're calling it. So on top of your monthly fee for a streaming service, you get to pay $30 a month to have access to Mulan. Bob Chopak assures us at the launch of this that it is a one-off, that this is not going to be a normal thing. However, Disney's customer service says, quote, as per checking in our data, that the $29.99 is on top of your yearly subscription and your Premier Access for now, we have the Mulan, but when the time goes by, the Premier Access will be more updated and more movies will be available to watch. So one-off, Bob Chopak, I'm starting to have some questions there. What movies go to your Premier Access on Disney Plus, guys?
I'm wondering if it's going to be like cable on demand, where you can like rent the movie beforehand, like, you know, cause like if you have DirecTV, I'm going to go way back here to when DirecTV first came out and when on demand stuff first started, and it hit there before it would hit at the, before it came into the like Blockbuster. So if you wanted to rent it, you could rent it digitally on demand first before you could rent it at a Blockbuster. Is it going to be like that kind of situation where, yeah, you know, these movies, if you pay the extra $30 a month, you get to watch them as, you know, basically as soon as it comes out of the theater, we're going to put it right on there for you to watch. And then it will go to Disney Plus 6 months later or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the timelines of that kind of stuff has been always been kind of a weird monster. And it has changed a lot, obviously, with all the streaming apps and then the streaming apps getting into the production game. So like, yeah, you would have it in theaters, then it would go to VOD, then it would go to home video, then it would go to HBO or Stars or Showtime or whatever their partner, whatever channel, whatever pay channel they owned. But I don't know. I guess I don't. I feel like this is a couple different things. I think one is like they found that there's, especially with certain types of movies, I don't know that this works as well with like non, I don't want to say non-kids movies, but I don't know how well this works with every genre of movie. But at the same time, it's one of those things. It's like, they're going to get their money. People are going to watch it. They probably learned some stuff from other releases. I think they also need to make some, they're making preparations for the fact that it might be a long time between before theaters open again. Yeah. Wow. And by the time theaters can open again, there may not be any theaters left.
Right.
Because they will have all gone bankrupt.
Well, here's the thing that gets to me here is they, at the same time, make that announcement about Mulan. They make the announcement of how many subscribers they have. And if you do the math, and obviously I think with Verizon was the one where you got 1 year for free. Like for me, where I was able to, because I had that Disney credit card, right? I was able to sign up for 3 years at like the cost of one. So there's obviously variables here. But if you were to average that 60 plus million subscribers, you're talking over $5 billion a year annually for just Disney Plus revenue. Obviously revenue, not profit. Do you really need to charge us $30 to see Mulan at this point? Like,
wait, why aren't they doing
the... You don't need to do anything, but are you willing to pay $30 to watch Mulan?
You're right. Some people will.
Goddamn, I will.
$140 to walk inside of a Disney park even. So, you know.
Yeah, it's fair.
But why aren't they just doing it the Prime model, right? Like, here's everything that you get to watch for free, and then we've got a section of stuff that you can rent or buy or whatever right from there digitally. Like, it seems like that's out there, and that works quite well. I rent plenty of movies from Prime and buy movies from them as well.
Like, well, I think there's a big piece that we leave out on this one, and we've talked about it on the podcast before about how it's every year it has more and more influence on what movies get made and what movies get financed and how the plots of even the plots of movies or the characters in movies. This movie, more so than probably any other movie that'll come out this year, a lot of the decisions being made around Mulan specifically have to do with the fact that we have to make sure that it comes out in all countries at the same time. Because if it comes out in a country before it comes out in China, we will lose a lot of money. because it's a movie that they have made specifically to appeal to a Chinese market. It's a Chinese story. It's a Chinese, you know, legend. But also, we, as we know, China has a huge problem with piracy and things like that. If they don't find a model that allows them to, they can't, or they open it in China nowhere. Like, there was talks there for a while that they were going to put it in Chinese theaters now and then just wait months until it got out to the United States. But they have to find a way to get it released everywhere at the same time or nowhere. So I think this was also one of those kind of concerns, one of those considerations when they made this call.
Right, right. And it's, and you bring up a really good point with the piracy there too. I think that's where Warner shows concern with Tenet. Like, they finally have come to a point to where it's like, we'll let it release in select theaters, we'll let it release in Europe. But you just increase the chances for it being pirated here in the United States if it isn't out in other countries as it is here, right? Like, and so they lose potential revenue by not making sure it's out everywhere at the same time, as you pointed out. So yeah, good call out. It's interesting. And I think we all obviously know, like you said, you guys know the answer. It's not that they need to, it's just people continue to pay this stuff, so the rich get richer because of it. Like, that's the way it's going to be. And as you mentioned, and we talked about it extensively when the Trolls situation happened last spring, parents, I could sit my kids down to watch a new movie that weekend, and then they can wake up Saturday and watch it again, and I don't have to do it. Like, here's $30 because I was going to pay $60 to $70 to go to the theater to see it anyways, if I was going to take 2 to 3 kids and get dinner and everything like that. So
if you're shocked that people are willing to spend $30 to show a movie to their kids, I need you to just do a quick YouTube news or Google search for interviews with parents about whether or not schools should open.
I have opinions there too, but we won't get into it. So, I think that's really interesting. Now with the customer service leading to it, I'm just trying to figure out, obviously, I think a lot of it will be based on the success for Mulan, right? So some people will pay, but how many people will pay? And if enough pay, then of course, this was never going to be a one-off, no matter what Bob Chapek said, no matter what the CEO says, and customer service already responding in ways to say there's more available. I think, Tyler, you bring up a huge point. We got to this point, we made tons of decisions. Even Project Nerd made certain business decisions and things like that earlier this summer with the idea that we locked down for a little bit, things are getting better. Obviously, a good percentage of Americans can't get their heads out of their asses and care about anybody else. So it just keeps getting extended further. And so businesses are now having to say, like, could it be 2 years that we're sitting on this stuff? How long does this stuff get backed up? We need to, like, how do we just find any way to get revenue right now? That's, I guess, these are some of the ways.
Yeah, this is the best they can get to carry out food. So $30 and you can have it. So, and I think there's something to be said with, not that Mulan's not a tentpole blockbuster, but I think if it was a different movie, you would see them be more willing to hold out. Like, they're not doing a $30 release for the next Star Wars movie or for the next Marvel movie. Like, that's not happening. Like, I think a live action remake of a movie you've already made, that's a very popular one, but not, this isn't Lion King, this isn't Beauty and the Beast, this isn't The Little Mermaid. Like, I think this is one in that middle tier of, like, it's a blockbuster, but it's not like a Disney big blockbuster that they can kind of, they can test the waters before they have to make the decision on whether or not they're going to do this with a real movie, like a real big movie.
And it was always ridiculous that this was going to be a one-off for a $30 a month charge. Like, how is that? I'm not going to pay you $30 a month for in perpetuity to only be able to watch Mulan extra. Like, that's not going to happen. So, you know, that's the thing that it, like, was always bizarre to me. It was like, yeah, it's $30 a month. And I'm like, why is it $30 a month? How often do you think people are going to be watching Mulan? What is, like, even if it's really, really good,
I was really looking forward to it. I don't know about $30 a month looking forward to it. No, this was, and I do have to remove some of that bias, because you're right, Tyler, a good part of our generation really appreciates Mulan here after the fact because of the concept of it. We're being told, oh, you're different, you can't be a part of this, and we're having to fight for our own fucking rights to do something. Like, so we've held on to it, but when it got released, you're exactly right, it wasn't at the level of these. I personally am super excited for this live action remake, because they're taking the you know, the music, the kind of quirkiness animated Disney element out of it, and adding in, you know, huge actors that have incredible skills and things like that. So really interested to see. But because I'm really excited for it, it's definitely not going to have been their most popular live action adaptation, which I think at this time it's still. Did Aladdin surpass Beauty and the Beast on box office earnings, or did it stay Beauty and the Beast for the live action remix? Tyler, I can tell he's gone to the Googles.
Right. Look that up for us real quick. He's got to be Beauty and the Beast.
While he's looking that up, I think it was. But Aladdin made some hella bank that summer, but Beauty and the Beast, that remake made so much money. Let's see. What is the verdict? You're going Beauty and the Beast, Adam?
Yeah, because it had the 3D release, right?
Did it? I don't know.
Do you want domestic or worldwide?
Let's do world. Money is money worldwide. Right,
money is money. It all comes back to Disney, so it doesn't matter, but all of it, yeah.
Wait, are these the remakes or not?
Does it have the? It doesn't have the year next to them?
It does, but this year here is wrong for one of these, so.
This is exhilarating
podcast. Oh, I get it, because they did. I forgot that Disney made a live-action Jungle Book back in the 90s. I totally forgot about that.
Right, yeah.
I saw that movie when I was a kid. I was like, what the hell is this Jungle Book movie from 94 that they're showing? Okay, so worldwide grosses, the number one is The Lion King, and it's by a lot, almost.
So The Lion King was the one that summer then, because The Lion King and Aladdin came out like a month apart, so maybe I was misremembering the one that...
And the domestic numbers almost match up, not exactly. Here's the big question. Which of the live action remakes that have come out? So the first one, so long ago. What's number four? I'll give you, so Lion King's number one, Beauty and the Beast is number two, Aladdin is number three. And domestically, Lion King 543, Beauty and the Beast 500, Aladdin 355. So a big drop to Aladdin. Beauty and the Beast, Lion King are both.
Number four, is it? I mean, we have the Cinderella one, I know. We have the more recent. Didn't we have a recent Jungle Book one?
We did have a Jungle Book. So John Favreau did Jungle Book
before. Right. Books. Yeah. Well, I meant like the Disney one, though, like the Disney live action. I don't think Cinderella did that well, although, to be honest, it was a good movie.
I will tell you, Cinderella is seventh with even like Maleficent, which they count in the Jungle Book ahead of it. So it's not. It's not Cinderella. I can definitely tell you it's not.
I was going to say Maleficent.
Is it going to be the Alice in Wonderland one?
It is 2010's Alice in Wonderland starring Johnny Depp.
Oh, yeah. You put Johnny Depp in.
I mean, that guy just prints money, right?
It made $334 million domestically and over $1 billion international. I mean, worldwide. And that was 10 years ago too.
I wouldn't have thought that one until you mentioned Maleficent being also in this category, and I was like, oh, okay, so I would have completely spaced on that until you gave that hint. So yeah, but seriously, Johnny Depp, you have a big franchise to where he's going to be kind of quirky, put a hat on, some makeup. Yeah, money.
Well, you say that, but then do you want to know how much domestic? So we said $334 million domestically for Alice in Wonderland. How much did the sequel make domestically?
Well, the first one sucked so bad.
I'm gonna go with $87, Bob.
that's too much. No.
It still had Johnny Depp in it. Still had Anne Hathaway in it. Had Helen Bonham Carter, Sacha Baron Cohen,
180,
Stephen Fry, Michael Sheen, Timothy Spall. Like, it had everyone. Danny Elfman still did the music.
Ridiculous. 180 million.
Nope.
Lower? See, 135.
So what you're saying is that
87 might have been right.
You're saying I was closest without going over is what you're saying.
You were really close. $77 million.
Did it get released in the summer of 2020 during a pandemic?
On a budget of 170.
Did it get released in 1918 and help end the world Second World War?
Yeah, good grief. I mean,
it came out in 2016 in May.
That cast alone, it would have cost $100 million just to get all those people on screen. Good God.
Well, to an extent, because a lot of those, especially Depp's, usually agreement is percentages. They may have a base salary though, but
It made its budget back worldwide. It made $300 million worldwide, but it made $77 million in the United States.
Wow. Massive layoffs at Alice in Wonderland, that's for sure. That's what Disney
has to do. That's really the thing, right? Like, there's all these movies getting sequels because they make money. And no one stops and goes, hey, that movie actually sucked. Like, everybody went and saw it, but
no. I mean, I remember seeing Alice in Wonderland in the theater. It was also one of the first movies I remember seeing outside of like Avatar, where it's like, we're going to go see this in 3D. And I just remember being angry. Like, it was so bad.
Yeah, I mean, those are the movies that you can watch look at the revenue numbers just fall off a table like 2 or 3 weeks out, right? Like, they are like huge numbers and they're number one at the box office. And then all of a sudden they're like number 20 behind some movie that nobody's ever heard of. And so but they make a bunch of money. And so they make a sequel because that's what they think is going to be a good thing. And it's just not. So,
well, I mean, up to this point, making a million sequels with Johnny Depp in them had always worked out well for Disney. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Yeah, but
those pirate movies made so much money.
Johnny Depp made a ridiculous amount. Johnny Depp made more money off of, what was it, the second and third Pirates, or the third Pirates. It was the second and third one because they filmed them in the same year, right? Like, they filmed it. So in that year of actually working, if I remember correctly, he made more money than it was like two or three of the major studios like made that year in terms of box office revenue because he brought home a huge percentage to come back for the second and third one. Bought some of his own islands, at least one out there. But all right. One thing I did notice too, we did cover it on Project Nerd. I almost forgot. NBC Universal did launch just a few weeks ago their own comic publishing branch. There is an editor in chief now from DC Comics floating around NBC. I mean, you guys, yeah. But all right. So another big thing is, we talked a little bit about it. So we covered it in a Diving Deep last fall with the High Vibe guys. You can check that out right here on the same podcast feed. And the idea of what the theater industry looks like when it comes back. Some interesting things happening. We mentioned, Tyler, that the theater's having. Bob went to a movie theater this past weekend. One of the art independent theaters in Kansas City is open. He went and saw Train to Busan. AMC is opening this weekend in select locations in select states with 15-cent tickets. Is this going to be a disaster, or is this... Okay, better question. What disaster does this bring? Because is it going to bring a disaster for AMC money-wise? Is it going to bring a disaster where the people come flying in and are way too close together on this? What's going to come of this, I guess, is the what to ask here.
Can I go with nothing good? Can that just...
I mean,
what are they showing? What's going to be in the theater?
They are still going to show... So what's that? Russell Crowe movie is still going to happen. I think this weekend, actually. You're still going to get Tenet in select theaters the following weekend. You have the Inception 10th anniversary, and the email I got from AMC had another 4 or 5 movies that were being re-released. There's still talks about, this is the 10th anniversary for Scott Pilgrim, and Edgar Wright wanted one with a end of it, having his like director comment, like a director interview at the end of it, and like a live, like even like teleconference interviews in select theaters. So there's options that could happen without a lot of new movies coming out. And if they see success, the studios will jump right back in to keep in some of those movies. Oh, New Mutants is still not been pulled from the calendar this in the next week or two. Like, it's still technically on the calendar. For the first time ever, they stick with it. Like, it keeps getting pulled. Then during the pandemics, when they're not going to let go of that day.
When they're like, we can put it out and be the only movie out. That's how it'll make money.
Now, the Draft House go ahead.
So I was talking with my wife about this earlier today, because we were out and about here in London and things were pretty safe. And we're like, so when are theaters going to open? Because if there's anywhere that could do distancing right, it would seem like it would be theaters. And make you reserve seats anyway, pretty much everywhere here anyway. And I know that was starting to get that way in the States, where you had to, where it's easier to go online and get your tickets and everything, or do it through their apps and all that kind of crap. So it seems like if there's anywhere that could do it and could do distancing right, it would be a theater. But you would think lots of places could do it right, and you would think lots of people would be okay with it, but that's not the case. And so it still seems too early.
Here, stateside, it definitely does. And I think you bring up a good point. So I mentioned it before we started recording. I finally adventured out into the world because we found a brewery in a further suburb out, to where all the tables, they have this whole big parking lot because it was an old factory. and the tables are like 12 feet apart, like not even just the 6 feet apart, like necessary space. And they have it spaced because there's so much space. And you scan the app on the table, you order everything, and you pay from the phone. And it made me think, when I was still doing the AMC A-list stuff before I switched over to the Draft House, my app would always say, do you want to order food on the app ahead of time? And now they'll bring it to your seat. So you can, so AMC in a lot of locations already had it set up to where you can avoid the concession stand lines. You, they have the app that's capable of it. It's just a matter of rolling it out to more locations. And you're exactly right. They can do it. Keep so many seats in between each party. So like if you're buying five tickets, you can buy all the seats next to each other. But if you see a ticket, like a seat already selected, then how many seats over before you select it? There's things that can be done, but I agree. It's not that the businesses need though. Like I get it. They need it. They need revenue. I feel terrible on this because you're stuck as consumers, as governors, as mayors, whatever, you're stuck in between a rock and a hard place right now, setting restrictions and also trying to get the economy moving. But it's not that the theater is not going to do the right things there. It's how many people are going to show up to a movie, and then that guy behind me is going to take off his mask and be coughing for 2 hours because he didn't stay home sick, right? Like, it's going to happen in the United States. We're already seeing it happen in schools and everywhere else as they reopen. So I think that's the problem, is that us as consumers, especially the ones that are the loudest about demanding that these businesses reopen so they can have them, are the ones that are causing the damage to them because they, you know, they're not being smart about it. So my fear is not that AMC or whoever else that follows suit's not going to do a good plan. It's that the people that are going to show up, you can't temperature check every person coming in. If you do, you know, what's her name? Karen's going to riot. Like, Karen's going to riot if you're temperature checking everybody. So I just think I agree. Nothing good's going to come of this early. Tyler, any hard opinions on it?
Nah, you can't do it. I mean, it's the same thing with the football and the everything else. Is someone needs to sit down and do the math, because statistically speaking, if you do this, someone will get sick. Lots of someone's will get sick, and someone will die, and then you have to answer for it. And like, I just don't know. I just don't know how you answer that question. Like, you look at all these schools that are saying no to football, and like, let's be clear, football makes a lot of money for a lot of big schools, but they've had the presidents or the ADs have had to sit down and do the mental math. It's like, the money is nice, but like, what's our game plan for when, if we just so happen to be the team on which someone dies? Whether it's a player or it's a coach or it's an assistant or some graduate, you know, assistant or some intern who just, you know, is the ball boy, like how do we answer? How do we go out in front of people and say, yeah, sorry, we just really needed the money from football? So,
well, I mean, those conferences in the Southeast, they think it's fine to just go get that revenue, but you know, it is. And it's surprising to see these certain sports leagues not operate in a bubble, because now we've seen certain things like that are operating in bubbles, holdout plan, like the NBA, it's working right now. And I know it's hard for things like theaters or other places to do that, but we can't, it's these things just want to reopen and be normal. And that's the thing. There is, I think we kind of mentioned earlier, we have to find a new normal. There is no going back to normal, whether it's this August, whether it's next August, whatever. It's until they figure out new normals, it's really hard. So just opening it up with discounted prices and a seat in between you and the next person, that's too much the old normal, right? Like, that's where the problem is.
Yeah. I mean, can a theater, and I suppose they can, because this is it. But I mean, if you could only put people in every third row, right? So you got two rows in between where anybody's sitting, and you had at least four seats in between horizontally in the row, you know, what does that drop the capacity to in the theater? It's got to be like 10 or 15%.
Right. And at 15 cents a ticket for this opening weekend?
Right. I mean, even if you go up to normal ticket prices, we hear all the time about, you know, theaters not making money off the tickets. Okay. So what if half of those people don't buy concessions because they don't want to stand in line, or people aren't social distancing properly, or whatever it might be? Is it worth it at all? Sure, money's coming in, but are you making any money? How much are you? Your operating cost stays the same, right? It costs money to buy the movies. It costs money to run the projectors. It costs money to run the air conditioning, all of that cost is the same, whether you have an empty theater or a full theater. And if you can only make 10% of your revenue or 15% of your revenue, how can you possibly continue to operate? And so
right.
I just don't get it.
Well, and then it leads to the other problem here too, is where I think it's hard. We need to open up businesses, but if you keep opening things up and then having to get to a point where you're closing it down, I feel you're doing more damage than have just, you know, buckling down for that time period, especially for these jobs that are minimum wage service jobs. Because if I keep working for 2 to 3 weeks with hardly making any tips, getting any hours, and then you cut me out for a month again, and then you want me to come back, and then you cut me out, like, I'm going to go find something else. I'm going to go find, you know, so yeah, there's a lot that you lose even long-term here with it, is what I think too. So if you open up, it fails, you brought all those employees back, like I said, even if none of their staff gets sick, right? But you close because it's not working. How much of that staff do you lose? Because they're like, I can't keep coming back. And, you know, I can't keep taking a month off and then coming back. So it's hard. We obviously don't get paid the big bucks to make these decisions, and for reasons, because we don't even know what the right answers are, right? Like it's a difficult right. situation. We get it. We're not thinking we have the right answer for everything. But if our opinion is to be anything, which if you're listening to our podcast, apparently our opinion, you either hate or you like, that's our opinion on the matter. So I don't know. It's really going to be interesting. Bob's going to be there. I really wanted Bob on this episode because I wanted to ask him about it. He was, like I said, he was already at a movie last weekend. And then when he messages me, hey, I just got out of that movie. It was really good. Really glad I got to see it. You know, hardly anybody's in the theater. Cool. Yeah. AMC opens next weekend. Looking forward to that. My reply to Bob was, I ain't touching that. I ain't going near that. One thing I do like, which I was going to lead to, and I know the Draft House is having a lot of other problems, so I'm not speaking negatively or positively for the company on that side, but there is one specific thing that they are doing cool, and they're only doing at a very few locations to test it, and one of them happens to be one of the locations here next to me, is they have a selection of about 30, 35 movies you can pick, and for 10 friends to 15 friends to put in the theater, $160 to rent that theater and watch that movie on a Thursday night, Friday night, or Sunday. And then you still order the food on the app ahead of time and they bring it to you. So you still order the food and everything like that. But you could go, one of the movies that I've looked at, for example, with my birthday coming up, is I could take 10 friends, each of us pay 16, you know, 20 bucks if you round up a piece to go get a private viewing of Jurassic Park in theaters and have some of that Draft House food brought to you, you know, some of those adult milkshakes, stuff like that. And I'm not worried about, you know, because the people I know that are sitting two rows behind me are friends that I trusted are going to be there with me. It's not the guy without the mask coughing on me, right? Like, so that scenario seems really cool. I'm surprised we're not seeing more theaters even just offer it. I know it's hard because, like, how, if nobody gets it, do you keep the staff on hand? What do you do here? But I'm surprised we haven't seen more experimenting with that, because that seems like a really cool thing that I'm really interested in investing a little bit of money into.
Yeah, and that's a reasonable amount of money, and it's a set amount that they know that they're getting. Like, it seems like you make them do it a week or 2 weeks ahead right. of time, something like that, so you know you can plan, you can get the staff there.
Get the food money. You get the food money because right. they're a full service like restaurant with the theater, and that's the goal, is to get you in and buy that food.
Right. I think that makes sense. You could even chop the menu down and only offer a couple different items, and you know, do it like like dinner theater used to do. You know, you got two or three options. You order your meal basically when you place your ticket order, and you go right from there. Like, it was like at a wedding. You want the fish or the chicken? Yeah, you're gonna get
right.
the chicken, right?
Right, every time. I was actually reminiscing about your wedding, Adam. Now that you bring that up, this past weekend I was telling Aaron all about it. Our long trip to Tallahassee.
Well, that's a bizarre story to tell somebody, my friend.
I didn't give them all details. I definitely gave some details. I gave the searching for somebody that I thought was on the roof details, where you were like, calm down, Iggy. She's probably just outside. Or the 20 trips to, was it the crepe zone? What is the crepe place that was?
Oh, the crepe vine. Oh,
crepe
man.
Vine? 20 crepe places vine there, and probably legit. 5 places to that, what was the other with the tofu?
Oh, Mr. Roboto.
Yeah.
I had to go to Mr. Roboto in Tallahassee.
Yeah, in the matter of 4 days, we ate at like those two restaurants probably like 25 times. And then, of course, the sick cat in the street, and then 30 breadsticks at your reception as well. That was always,
oh, yeah.
It's a good time. Mm-hmm. It was a good time. Mm-hmm. I was reminiscing on it. But as I finish reminiscing here, I think really looking forward to soon introducing our new podcast series, B-Sides and Rarities, to where we're just going to record occasionally with some people here, some other Project Nerd staff members, other people that have been tied to or hung out with the Project Nerd team in the back, and just really reminisce on stories. Just kind of tell some stories about conventions. Tyler can share some embarrassing things about myself, you know, for some stories. We can talk about some fun things that happened. Really put it out there, give you some behind the scenes of Project Nerd. And the idea would be that we have a good stack of those podcasts and they'll air when we can't find time to record these more time sensitive ones.
You make it sound like there's only embarrassing stories about you.
Oh, well, I just offered up me. I didn't want to offer up anybody else there, but I know there's a hand. We have a good time. We have a good time on those weekends, or we did when we got to travel. But
no, I feel like there's, I feel like there has to be some line drawing done before.
Oh, cause you're worried about your story.
I mean, there's only probably two stories that I can think of off the top of my head from conventions that I'm embarrassed about, but both of which involve copious amounts of alcohol. So
all the stories involved. There's a lot of them. Yeah. But we'll have that. And of course, like I said, right here on this podcast feed, more diving deep coming around the corner. We'll do your best to educate you on some of the social and political topics happening ahead of the election. Of course, the podcast Unreal, the improv podcast, that's fun. Our gaming channel is really picking up steam with, of course, the Game Pitch. Been going out for like 4 months, 5 months now. It's been consistently going. You'll catch that this week as well as the new Top 4 and More podcast, which has been pretty exciting, where Eli and Brandon rank their basically Mount Rushmore of a gaming, certain gaming topic. I think their upcoming one is like Pokemon, like, electric type or something. Like, they're getting pretty creative with some of those Mount Rushmores. And then of course always High Five, the G-Spot, Dude Sweet, and Meeple Skills, as well as many other podcasts we have going on here. So check it out, Project Nerd Podcast. It's been a rough summer. We all, you know, we're all kind of going through this together. It's hard. We go through gaps. It's hard to find motivation. We've got personal stuff we're dealing with. You know, you get stuck inside. It's hard to sit in front of a computer for another hour. Even I enjoy it when we do it. You get to sit here and talk with friends, but it's hard to find that time and motivation to do so. But we assure you, as we head into the fall, much more amazing podcast content coming, and hopefully some other big announcements around the quarter too. Obviously, the Nerdcast here brought to you by Geek Garage. But we've got a few more minutes left. It's been a while since we've done some closing thoughts, guys. Got anything to say in closing here?
I finally got back to reading again, mainly just because some books I needed to read finally came out. So I read the newest Dresden Files book, read the sequel to Gideon the Ninth, Harrow the Ninth. It was really good. I'm currently reading the third of the Barrow Coromat books, which I'm really enjoying. And I've been playing Monster Hunter World again. I bought it for PC, and I've A Dirty Job. It's a great book. A little Christopher Moore there. Iggy's holding up. So. Yeah, I've been playing Monster World for some reason. It came out I don't know why, but a lot of my friends are playing Horizon Zero Dawn for the first time, which I'm really excited about because it just came out for PC. So people who didn't own PlayStations are now playing it for the first time and really enjoying it. So if you're not a PlayStation person, but you're a PC person, that's a really good game and you should buy it. And the game that you get for PC comes with all the DLC and everything. So just do that.
Nope. Reading and playing games. I mean, things you can definitely do, pandemic or no pandemic, right? Adam, sir, I'm sure you have some of those things going on as well.
Yeah, doing that stuff. I wanted to leave my final thought as something for people to think about. I was with some friends at a reasonably distanced pub, like you were talking about earlier, and we were having a conversation about two things for movies that I think were really interesting. And it was, what is one movie you saw way, way before you should have when you were a kid? Like one movie that was inappropriately aged for you that you watched.
People Under the Stairs.
That you either really enjoyed or that.
It's 100% mine as well, People Under the Stairs.
Yeah. Or for most of us, it's.
Or maybe the first Child's Play.
Totally screwed you up because it was probably a horror movie. Yeah. And then the second one was, what was your like go-to movie when you were younger? Like what movie just like for us, because we're old, was in the VCR and just got rewound
Tombstone.
And played straight again?
Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Man, like my fifth and sixth grade year, I watched the shit out of some Tombstone. Like any day I was homesick, I watched Tombstone Field of Dreams. Like, those were on the screen all the time. But those are some good questions. What were your answers, Adam?
Nightmare on Elm Street, famously. Saw that when I was 5 and terrified me. So
yeah, you love horribly it now.
Horribly inappropriate. Yeah, no, it turned a corner at about 13 where I was like, I enjoy the hell out of this now. And I like scary movies. So, you know, maybe that was good. And then my movie I watched a ton of, I couldn't come up with just one because there were a bunch. And it also might be in the inappropriate for me age-wise, because I was probably like 7 or 8 and I watched the hell out of The Lost Boys because I have an older sister who loved the movie. I also watched a whole hell of a lot Young Frankenstein. That's
the one. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
A good one.
Because that's my mom's favorite Mel Brooks movie, and so we would watch that all of the time. And I, you know, so those were two movies that I knew I could watch, and anybody who came in would be okay that it was being watched. Right. So if my sister comes into the room, like I had to pick a movie that I knew I, you know, could watch no matter who came in. And so it's probably one of those two.
Good answers. I like
it. So yeah, you guys think about, leave some comments for us. Let us know what movie you saw at an inappropriate age for when you saw it, and what movie you just watched on repeat. If you're young, what movie you just started the DVD again? And if you're old like we are, what movie you hit rewind on the VCR when it got
wore out the tape?
Yeah.
If you're really old, you took it out of the VCR, put it in the rewinder, then put it back.
Back in the VCR.
Easy, Mr. Bougie. Well, let's rewind on the VCR.
Right.
Some VCRs didn't have the rewind button though. Right. My grandpa didn't have a rewind button.
I remember when the Laserdisc first had the auto flip.
No, but it was one of the ones that popped up. Like,
right. Oh, yeah, the top loader.
Yeah, and she only had like, and that's another one I watched a million times, because it was like the one tape she had at her house, and it was like 101 things to do with like Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop, and it was just like it was like Charlie Horse and Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop, and then like stupid magic tricks and games and stuff like that. It was really fun. I watched that a lot of times.
I love it. Good question. Answers obviously can be left over at Project Nerd on this post, as well as our Facebook, reply to Twitter, anywhere we post this. To you know, anywhere you find the podcast. I know it's harder if you're picking us up on Google or Apple. We encourage you to head on over to projectnerd.com. Anyways, my bit is it puts a little in your court too, and that's especially, I was thinking when that was. I've been really, kudos on those that can find good social distancing places to go out and stuff too. But I've been really on the social distancing thing. So that pub that I mentioned, or more so a brewery here in the States, it's the first place I really went to. And it really got me thinking, it's like, man, they're not waiting on a lot of people. Leave those huge tips. But then it really got me thinking too, is as things go, whatever we want to call it, a normal, new normal, whatever, schools open up, people get back out there and stuff, we have to remember the conventions still aren't happening. So those artists, those creators, those independent people that you would normally support at those shows still don't have shows to go to. And there's many of them that this is what they fully live on. And since they are self-employed, even those, whether those benefits come back or not, those unemployment benefits weren't there for them. So if you can, if you got the money still to this day, especially as you head into the holidays over the next few months to get gifts for family and stuff, independent comics, artwork, have them do commissions, because that's even more money and it's something very personal for you. Just be hitting up those favorite artists, those creators, those people that you would see at those comic conventions normally. Go to their websites, go to their fan pages, see what they're up to, throw them some cash, get some cool work. They still need your support very much, because again, it's going to be a while before we see events of those size happening again, even if other stuff opens up now. So with that episode, I had it too, and then I left the page. Episode 232 of the Nerdcast, brought to you by Geek Garage, geek-garage.com. Amazing people. Check them out. We love them. Obviously, they do great stuff and did great stuff, especially during this pandemic of, those drive-bys, as we called them, or whatever. What did we end up coming with a proper term for them? It wasn't drive-bys. I think, I don't remember.
We did.
We literally have this conversation every, and I can't remember. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while since we recorded. We'll have to go look it up. But
drive-bys are fine.
At this point, just drive by my house.
Quit talking about drive-by. I mean, really, we just can't use the drive-by term in reference to children's birthdays.
Okay.
Like, they will come to a drive-by of your child's birthday. That just sounds really bad.
Okay. Yeah. Well, check them out either way. But that's it for this episode of the Nerdcast. Until next time.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.